are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, the daily podcast on the San Francisco 49ers. I'm your host, Brian Peacock, excited to chat with another distinguished member of the Locked On Podcast Network. Grant Goldberg is going to be joining me. He is the host of Locked On Seahawks. So we're going to get to know the division rival Seattle Seahawks a little closer, take a look at what happened this offseason with the Seahawks, how they look, the draft, the very different team they'll be rolling into 2018 with, and get the latest info on Earl Thomas's holdout and see how Seahawks fans feel about Richard Sherman signing with the San Francisco 49ers. Quick reminder to subscribe, rate, review the show on iTunes. Thanks everybody who's getting involved with all the mailbag stuff and all the interaction with listeners. I really do appreciate it. You can always reach out to me on Twitter at BDPeacock or email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Not always able to respond to everything or read emails and tweets to the show, but I do appreciate when people do send me a note or give some love to the podcast, even if it's not something necessarily for air. Got a great group of loyal and growing group of loyal listeners here on Locked On 49ers. Looking ahead this week, I will be chatting with Matt Williamson of Locked On NFL on Tuesday's show. And then, of course, we've got another Winky Wednesday lined up for you there. You can keep those mailbag questions coming and some other guests lined up for you Thursday and on into next week, too. So we're going to keep this thing rolling again daily until, well, until that baby comes, and then I don't know, the schedule's going to change a little bit, but I think Winkler might start doing some more heavy lifting over here, and we'll still be bringing some podcasts your way. Schedule to be decided once that baby does arrive. Exciting times for the Peacock family, and with that, yeah, let's move this thing along. Let's bring on today's guest, Grant Goldberg. He is the host or co-host of Locked On Seahawks right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, along with Spike Friedman hosting that fine program. You can find him on Twitter at Grant Goldberg, and you can find the Locked On Seahawks podcast at Locked Seahawks on Twitter. Grant, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you for having me. Anytime somebody extends an invite to talk about the Seahawks at 10:30 at night, you got to take it. So I'm excited to join the show, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So here we go. We're going to bash on the Seahawks for a half an hour. You ready? No.
I've actually prepared to do that. They've had a lot of big changes, and not all of them have been so great. So, you know, if that's where the podcast goes, I'll join in and pile on.
No, definitely no bashing. I don't bash anything involving my guests that are kind enough to join me, especially when it's late at night. But yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to get into with you is what's the vibe around the team right now? How do the fans feel about what's going on right now with the Seahawks offseason? And one player in particular, we'll talk about this player, I'm sure, at some point coming up, but just overall, like, how are the fans feeling about what's going on in Seattle right now?
Well, you know, there's two mindsets going on about the Seahawks. When you talk about the fans, there's, you know, extreme pessimism and extreme optimism. And, you know, there's stuff to add to each argument. But it's really a transitional phase that they're going through right now. You see all these star players leaving. You cut Richard Sherman. You trade Michael Bennett. Cliff Avril retires. And, you know, they're really going to have to count on younger guys. And that's, you know, largely what Seattle based their success off over the last few years, all these young guys coming up and growing into star players. And so they're going to have to count on that, or else, you know, we're going to see the win total diminish again this year. But, yeah, there's upside to this team. There's downside to this team. But we're really going to have to wait for week one to see, you know, what kind of team this is, because there's been so much change.
And so when it comes to all the change that's gone on with the team, the one guy, and I'm sure, like you mentioned before, there's always the small group that's the sky is falling group, and then the small group that always thinks it's the best team of all time. You're going straight to the Super Bowl every season. And, you know, obviously, usually the answer is right kind of in the middle somewhere. But when it comes to losing players, and for 49ers fans, it was weird and it was hard. And I think it's really come full circle now where fans are welcoming Richard Sherman is and Richard Sherman in, and he's kind of been a coach on the field because he's not fully healthy yet. But man, seeing him wearing the scarlet and gold has been kind of odd, and it's been a surprising turn. I got to imagine it was probably harder for Seahawks fans to let go and see him come to San Francisco than it was for 49ers fans to embrace him.
Yeah, Richard Sherman has been nothing but great during his time in Seattle, on and off the field. He's a fan favorite, and you know, he's played a big part in getting to the Seahawks to where they are at. But I think myself and a lot of fans have reached the point where they just want to see the players do well and want to be happy for the players as people. And so, you know, for him to tear his Achilles, and you know, he's getting, you know, up there in age for a football player, so you want to see him, you know, come back and do well. And you know, if it's with the 49ers, that, you know, that sucks for us, obviously. You know, he's an all-pro player, but at the same time, you want to see this guy do well. Admittedly, I saw him in the 49ers new throwback uniforms, and I was just disgusted with how good it looked. I thought those uniforms looked so clean, and you know, he just looked almost right in it, which felt so wrong coincidentally. But yeah, the 49ers are getting a great player, you know, like I said, on and off the field, and it's bittersweet to watch, definitely.
Yeah, and then I was reminded about Richard Sherman, and he went to Stanford, and so the red is kind of not that foreign to see him wearing that color necessarily. But yeah, it is weird, and I think it's crazy because if you took a poll, like a popularity poll from 2014, and asked 49ers fans, who do you like more, Michael Crabtree or Richard Sherman? You know, it would be a landslide win. And right now, it would probably be a landslide in the other direction. And it's kind of crazy how that kind of stuff can flip.
Oh, definitely. I think that there's so much irony in the signing. But like I said, I think 49ers fans are going to love him. He's, you know, personality and he's charismatic, but he doesn't leave anything off the football field. He's a great player. He's going to give you guys his all.
Yeah, and he's the prototype for the position. So it was like the 49ers were shopping for cornerbacks, and they said, well, instead of looking for a Richard Sherman-like cornerback, let's bring in Richard Sherman. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think he's going to be actually huge for a guy like Akello Witherspoon, and just having, like you said, a coach on the field, you know, while he's recovering, the time spent in the film room, there's, you know, a few guys that rival Sherman, you know, in wits and smarts on the football field. So having him in there for the young guys, that's something I'm certainly envious of.
More about the Seahawks momentarily, but guys, we need to talk. Remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made right here in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code Locked On. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. So I want to circle back to something you said a little bit ago, and we were talking about how the Seahawks, you know, their rise came from drafting well and all the young players. And on the flip side, the 49ers, you saw how they kind of did the same thing for a while, and then once those players started leaving and they didn't draft as well after that, the decline can be sort of precipitous, you know? So, and it fell apart so quickly for San Francisco. Now, the Seahawks aren't losing their head coach, which I think was a big part of the identity, and the 49ers didn't really know where to go for a while and sort of spin their wheels for a couple of seasons there. You still have a quarterback. You still have a coach. Do you get the feeling that that's enough, even if maybe the drafts weren't as good for Seattle as they had been when they built the thing up originally?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I've talked to Spike about and we've worried about on air, is that recently – with the exception of, you know, this year and last year. The drafts haven't been super strong. 2013, I believe there's no players on the roster still. In 2014, there's one. And so wow. You get a little worried right there. But I think they've drafted well enough in the years before that and in the past couple of years where I think they'll be all right. I don't think we're going to see, you know, their win total plummet. But, yeah, they've drafted well enough. They have Russell Wilson. They have Bobby Wagner. They still have Earl Thomas despite, you know, a holdout, which I'm sure I'm going to talk about with Spike. Mm-hmm. And it's huge that they re-sign him. But as long as they have those three core pieces, they can fill out the team around them and they'll still be competitive.
So speaking of those drafts, let's talk about the draft. Obviously, there was a couple of bad drafts for the Seahawks there. And you've made some changes. You made some coaching changes as well. It seemed like they just kind of thought, well, we can bring anybody in the offensive line. I mean, they did spend one first round pick there, but they thought Tom Cable can just fix everything. And it kind of seemed like it didn't work out that well. And like, if you're a Seahawks fan, I think the number one thing you want is to protect Russell Wilson, right? Because that's where the W's and the L's are going to come from, you know, aside from some stalwarts you still have on the defensive side of the ball. So the more recent drafts since 2014 and especially 2018, what are we looking at with these drafts? How have those guys developed and what is the feeling like in the latest draft?
Well, I'm actually pretty optimistic about this latest draft. I'm big on Rasheem Green. He's a super young prospect at defensive end, but he can actually, you know, fill in sort of that Michael Bennett role where he can play multiple positions on the line. He's raw, but he's got great speed and really great power. So that's a guy I'm really excited about. Obviously, Shaquem Griffin, you don't know if he's going to, you know, see the field a whole lot on defense, but he's a player that's really going to swing things on special teams, which is huge for the Seahawks when they're at their best. Last year, their special teams unit it fell off. And so having a guy with his kind of speed and his kind of athleticism and power coming down the field on the special teams unit, that's going to be huge. But the guy that Spike and admittedly myself, I'm getting more excited about by the day is Michael Dixon, the punter that the Seahawks drafted, who seems otherworldly when he decides to punt the ball. He has a knack for getting it inside the 20, and there's clips all over Twitter of him just bombing 60-yard punts and pinpointing it right inside the 10-yard line. So that's a guy that's going to flip the field for the Seahawks and give the long field to the opponents that we're getting really excited about. I think that we're going to transition to locked-on punters just because of Michael Dixon.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a joke right now about the Seahawks and needing a great punter now because they're going to be so bad, right?
I mean, at least they're going to tire out other teams' offense at worst if it goes the other way for the Seahawks.
So now the one guy you didn't mention, or at least I didn't catch it if you did, is Rashad Penny, the Seahawks' first-round draft pick. A lot of people didn't quite have him, even though he was liked by a lot of people as a running back out of San Diego State. A lot of people didn't have him as a first-round graded player. What are the thoughts there on the newest running back for the Seahawks, Rashad Penny?
Well, he's a very talented player, and you know he has that ability to just pick his hole and then just accelerate through it. He's got a knack for shedding arm tackles, and he's actually really, really good at returning the ball. But you know, I'm excited about it. I've grown to like the pick a little bit more since draft night. The reason why I thought that the pick wasn't very necessary at the beginning was the emergence early last year of Chris Carson, him coming back healthy, and a running back room that just really went through a tough year with injuries. Granted, they weren't really good when they were healthy, but they got rid of Tom Cable. They added Mike Solari as the offensive line coach, so there's a little bit of hope there. And they signed Brian Schottenheimer to run the offense, and so it's going to be really run-oriented, and that pick doesn't surprise me. I'm really interested to see how he does as a pass catcher out of the backfield on the NFL level. Brian Schottenheimer in minicamp has put an emphasis on getting running backs involved in the passing game, as we've seen a lot of teams do. And you know, I'm growing more excited about it, but still, I think it was a little bit of an overpay, and he would have been available if they wanted to trade up into the mid second.
So we got to talk about Earl Thomas here, and I do want to get a little bit more into some other NFC West stuff and maybe some predictions, you know, somewhat too early predictions, basically. But Earl Thomas, hold out. What's going on with that? Is this a hard line situation where he sees the changes happening, hears his name in trade rumors, and he's like, well, screw this. I want my contract. I want to be set up before I go forward with what's going on right now with this team.
Yeah, well, I think when you are the best safety of this decade, I think you have a little bit of room to bargain for a new contract. Earl Thomas has been nothing but otherworldly when it comes to, you know, playing football. He's the driving force of the defense. He's the safety net. He's what allowed the Seahawks to play their style of defense, you know, with that kind of security to keep everything in front of them because they had Earl Thomas behind them. And so he's deserving of, you know, whatever his contract's demands are. He deserves to be the highest paid safety in the game. And I think the Seahawks know that, and they have to pay up. I just can't see a scenario where, you know, Earl Thomas doesn't deserve that money. It'd just be, you know, for lack of better terms, moronic just not to give him his money. He's deserved it. And you mentioned it, a time where, you know, you see all these changes happening. You want some security. You want to know that you're safe and you're going to get your dollar. And then from there, you can go on the field and produce for the team.
And we talked about Richard Sherman and his talent, and there's Cam Chancellor and Bobby Wagner who have been special players for the Seahawks, among a ton of other players on that defense over the past recent few years. Is Earl Thomas the best one? Is he the one that really makes it go? As I know 49ers fans, we kind of argued last year before the first draft for Kyle Shanahan when they brought in Robert Saleh as the defensive coordinator, and they were moving to this defensive scheme, and everyone was thinking, well, gosh, you got to get that center fielder, that free safety, because you can't run this scheme without that Earl Thomas type. And then you start looking at prospects and you're like, well, there's nobody. Nobody's an Earl Thomas type. This guy's kind of a freak. So, and it turns out everybody they threw out there at safety for the 49ers actually played pretty well. So, as far as the scheme goes, how important is that center fielder, or is Earl Thomas just that good where, you know, they could run the scheme with some other players, but he just makes things go?
Well, they tried to run this game with other players when he was hurt a couple years ago and last year, and it just was abysmal for the defense. The other teams took the top off and really did what they wanted. Earl Thomas, he's a freak, like you said. He's one of one. He just covers so much ground in the passing game, and he gets to the line of scrimmage in a blink of an eye and makes an impact in the run game as well. I just don't think that there's a player that can replicate what Earl Thomas does. You can certainly patch up, you know, if he's missing, but he's the driving force. Like I said earlier, he's what makes the Seahawks, well, he's what made the Legion of Boom the Legion of Boom, in my eyes.
Just a quick reminder, you are listening to Locked On 49ers. The story of the day today is the Seattle Seahawks. We're talking to Locked On Seahawks host Grant Goldberg. Remember, you can learn more at LockedOn49ers.com, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The biggest stories with local experts. All right, so Grant, let's move on to the NFC West a little bit. So we talked about what the Seahawks are looking like and how things are coming together for the Seahawks and all the changes that are happening in Seattle. The Seahawks were, what, 9-7, right, in 2017? Right. That was good for second in the NFC West. The Rams just burst onto the scene last year, and then just upgraded more and got more talent this offseason. 49ers are an upcoming, up-and-coming team. Jimmy Garoppolo has never lost a game as a starting quarterback. So looking at this NFC West picture here, where do you see the Seahawks in all this? And do you think they're a team that's going to get worse before they can get better? Is this going to be a retooling year where they might take a dip and maybe aren't, you know, a team that's really fighting for a playoff spot late in the year?
I think it's going to be a little bit more of a plateau than a dip. I think they're going to still hover around that 9-7 range. They've got their core players, like I mentioned, Russell Wilson, Earl Thomas, Bobby Wagner, and they're going to have to rely on some young guys to step up. But I think they're going to be that kind of team that is on the cusp of the playoffs but can't really get that push to make it in. They're definitely going to play spoiler for a few teams. But I can't quite see them falling off so, you know, meteorically that they just fall to the bottom of the division. I know the Cardinals, they've gotten better. Obviously, the 49ers have gotten better. The Rams, you know, are already really good. They seemingly got better on paper. I can't see them falling a whole ton. I think they're going to be I'm going to say second in the division still, but I wouldn't surprise me if the 49ers leapfrogged them this year, but I think they'll hover around that 9-7 range.
Are their thoughts, are Seahawks fans or you or Spike kind of, when you're looking at the 49ers and seeing how things are being built, I mean, not a bunch of huge names brought in recently aside from the Garoppolo thing, but they're building things slowly and adding talent and started playing really well at the end of the year. 49ers fans are super excited and they're expecting to be there at the end of the year and be competing for a playoff spot. Is the 49ers a team that Seahawks fans are starting to look at and think, got a good coaching staff, got a good GM in place, adding talent, got their quarterback. This might be a team we have to worry about.
Oh, definitely. I think that, you know, it'd be a little ignorant to look at the 49ers and not see all the changes going on there for the good. Like you said, you guys got your quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. You're building a fast young defense. And, you know, you got the head coach and GM pair of the future, I think, that for success. And, you know, we kind of saw it at the end of 2011 with the Seahawks where they, you know, strung together a few wins and, you know, fans start to think, well, there might be something. And, you know, maybe they're a few pieces away from actually getting in the playoff picture. And then they draft Russell Wilson. They draft Bobby Wagner, Bruce Irvin at the time. And they really pieced together and were able to, you know, put some wins on the board and make it into the playoffs, and we're, you know, defensive collapse away from the NFC Championship game. And so I think that, you know, the 49ers, while they're young and they've had their fair share of losses, they're, like you said, on the up and coming, and I think that they're going to make some noise next year.
So it's interesting, we were talking earlier about the retool, and so maybe the plateau that the Seahawks are on right now. Is there a thought that, like, are some people making the argument that maybe they should have torn it down even more and maybe faster and completely rebuild the whole thing in Seattle?
I think they still have too many of their core fundamental pieces and are not too far removed from, you know, winning seasons and deep playoff runs to do that. But I can see the argument. Obviously, you could see the argument with people talking about Pete Carroll and maybe his message is getting a little stale. I know Richard Sherman's come out and Cliff Averill alluded to that after he retired. And so you start to question some things, but you've got so many pieces in place still, Pro Bowl, All-Pro players. And so there's still enough to warrant building around them and not just blowing it up quite yet.
Yeah, and actually Pete Carroll is a Bill Walsh disciple, and Bill Walsh said that he was kind of the guy that came up with that 10-year time frame, and he walked away when he didn't have to. The 49ers won a Super Bowl the year after he walked away, and in his last season as well. And so, yeah, he always said, you know, after 10 years, it's time to walk away. Your message becomes stale, and right, it might be difficult to kind of keep things going for the long term. So, you know, Pete has some time left. He's not the youngest guy, but it would seem to me that I think the Patriots are sort of the model for,
yeah,
and they have to be, for trying to have, you know, for longevity, trying to win for a long time. You've got your quarterback, you've got a good coach. You almost have to be ruthless everywhere on your roster and make sure that those two things are what is the driving force going forward, right?
Definitely. I think that, especially, I'm going to use Richard Sherman's words, that it's more of a college environment for the Seahawks. Pete Carroll is, you know, a youthful guy for, you know, how old he is. But I think that getting some new bodies in there, getting some young guys in there is going to be really good for the Seahawks. And they're going to buy into that message and really produce for Pete Carroll. He's a guy that, you know, can get into the head of the young guys and ingrain some of these core fundamentals to win. And so as long as he gets some fresh bodies in there, some young guys that can play physical, that can play fast, that buy into his message, I think that's a really positive thing for the Seahawks. And that's one of the things that has me excited for this season.
Just real quick, looking back before I let you go here, Grant, at old-time Seahawks. And I remember a time when the Seahawks weren't the 49ers' rival and they were a lovable team in the AFC West. And I actually used to like watching the Seahawks, even, you know, they weren't very good for a while there. But when they would beat the Raiders, I was like, yeah, I kind of like this Seahawks team. When they came over to the NFC West, I was like, oh, it's not a natural rival. And that got heated very quickly. But old-time Seahawks, do you have an old-time favorite Seahawk player?
Yeah, I'm a really young guy in the grand scheme of things. I just turned 21 this year, but going back and watching some Kenny Easley, especially with the prominence of the Legion of Boom over the last few years, like he was probably the OG member of the Legion of Boom. The way he played, so fast, so physical. I mean, you see, it took a toll on his body. He only played, I think, 7 years. But he was a defensive player of the year, all pro, led the team to an AFC championship game. I can't come up. He's like, if you blended Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, that's kind of what Kenny Easley was. And just the ferocity that he was on the field with, it was unrivaled when he was playing. So that's probably number one. Obviously, Steve Largent is a guy that, you know, a lot of Seahawks fans admire. Cortez Kennedy. And I'll throw Walter Jones in there. He's a little bit of a newer guy in the big picture, but you know, he's probably one of the best left tackles to ever play.
Yeah, that's a good list. Those are some good names there. Sean Alexander was a fun one to watch there for a while. Yeah,
he was my first Seahawks jersey. I was a little kid. I put it on. It didn't fit, but I still wore it just because he was my favorite player at the time.
Yeah, you got to, man. That's awesome. There's, oh man, who am I thinking of? There's one running back in the 90s that I used to like a lot, sort of a taller running back. Mm-hmm. Oh man, I'm blanking on him right now. Gosh dang it. Chris Warren.
Chris Warren.
Yeah, he was a fun Seahawks player to watch back in the day, pre-NFC West days.
Yeah, I'll throw Kurt Warner in there too. Kurt with a C.
Yes.
He was electric when he took the field as well.
The original Kurt Warner.
Right, the OG Kurt Warner.
Absolutely. So how many Michael Dixon jerseys are you going to see around Seattle? I think just by the way you built him up already on this podcast, they should just give him number 12 because that's the kind of impact he's going to have for the Seahawks.
Well, he took Steven Hauschka's old number. So if fans are smart and they want to save a little money, I think they'll just put a piece of duct tape over it and pencil in the name.
Patch it up.
That's certainly what I got to do. I had a Steven Hauschka shirt at one time, so I think I might have to pull it out of the closet and do that little change myself.
Yeah, you could have the Seahawks punter version of that Browns quarterback jersey where it has all the quarterbacks replaced.
Yeah, I got to put John Ryan on there first just to pay my respect.
That's awesome. That is Grant Goldberg. You can find his work at Locked On Seahawks along with Spike Friedman. You can find him on Twitter at Grant Goldberg. Grant, thank you so much for joining Locked On 49ers, man. It was fun talking to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. We should do this again when the season rolls around and things get a little more competitive.
Absolutely. We'll do that before the contest coming up in 2018. Absolutely. Thanks again, man.
Of course.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of Locked On 49ers. Be back on Tuesday with Matt Williamson. He's the host of Locked On NFL. We're going to continue talking about the NFC West and the NFL as a whole, as well as get his thoughts on what's going on in 49er land. And then, of course, Winky Wednesday coming up this week as well. So keep dropping those mailbag questions on us. You can hit me up on Twitter at BD Peacock, or you can email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And I will talk to you then right here on Locked On 49ers.